everybody, and welcome back to the podcast that brings you stories of magic, miracle, and mystery to remind you that this world indeed is an incredibly fabulous place. So this is a midweek miracle episode. I haven't done one of those in a while, but I interviewed Celeste the other day, and I absolutely wanted to bring our conversation to you ASAP. Now, who is Celeste, you may ask, and well that you do. Celeste is so very much, but among many things, she's an ordained minister, a wisdom keeper, a licensed massage therapist, as well as a certified Chi Ne Sang practitioner. She's also an author, and we talk about her book a little bit later. I found Celeste through some friends and got some body work from her, and I talk about that a little bit in this episode. But really, truly, it's her book titled How Do You Pray that absolutely gobsmacked me and made me want to get to know her better. So we've kind of been trying to find a time, I think since February, and we finally did it the other day. So that's the end of this intro. I don't want to talk too much. I'd rather we get into the meat of the conversation. And yeah, I can't wait for you to meet Celeste.
I woke up very early one morning. It was dark outside. The room was illuminated, and I heard the words, "How do you pray?" Is it an hour a week as a designated place of worship? Or do you take your prayers out to the streets? I am a lover of life, and that is what really motivates me to do things. I am so sparked by people, by nature, by the world, by the universe, by all of the unknown. I'm so curious. I'm so intrigued and excited about everything, and I feel this great connection to it all.
Beautiful.
So that would be my first part of that answer.
I love that. I love a layered answer where there's many parts. I met you through a woman's group here in Santa Fe. And once I found out that you did you do body work. Okay. But you also specialize in something that I am very intrigued by, because I know that I carry a lot of my own grief, but also, life experiences, things that I have gone through or suffered through. I feel like, I'm sure you're familiar with the word sustos in curanderismo. It's when someone suffers a slight or an insult or some sort of trauma, it gets locked in your body. And I know I carry that in my, my digestive system. And so when I found out you did one of your modalities was abdominal massage, I jumped at the chance to see you. Can I ask, when you were a kid, did you think you'd be doing body work? Was this something that called to you?
Well, it didn't call to me in a way that I know of. I think as a kid, I loved acting and theatrics and really doing things like ritual. And so moving into this phase of life, I see that I like expression and connection. And I'm a very touchy-feely person. Connection physically like that. So I had no idea back then, but I'm not really that surprised now. And as I spoke of that curiosity, Well, the abdomen is this vast, visceral, dark, fertile, unknown place. So as a massage therapist for, who knows how many decades, a couple, in 2000, getting exposed to this abdominal modality was all that I was waiting for. Once I learned that, and so it's this last, 20, yeah, like a while, right? 26 years, I've been doing exclusively that, pretty much. I don't do the full body massage anymore. I work on the abdomen and breasts, the breast massage, and now I am going deeper into the womb healing, which isn't as much hands-on as it is with guided visualizations and self-directed body work. But the abdominal work, I have such a love for, because my hands have the eyes and the feeling to go where they need to go and to facilitate what that person I'm working with needs to become aware of.
Oh my God, lovely. I just want to share with the listeners my experience, because and you and I talked about this after the session, you know, I didn't know that you were done and standing on the other side of the room, and I'm just blissed out and on your table, and I could still feel hands on my abdomen. So I thought you were still working. I mean, I felt the pressure. I felt, you know, some movement. I absolutely felt hands on my abdomen. And then you went, you made some sort of tiny noise over by the chair, which is nowhere near the table. And I thought, what is happening here? What are the hands that I can still feel on my abdomen? What is happening? And you and I talked about it, and you said, you know, someone else has mentioned that happening as well. And I was astounded. It was astonishing.
I thought maybe I said, oh, that's Kuan Yin.
You did. You said that. And I had never had an experience. I had no reference points for something like that. You know, I've certainly read books where people talk about healing experiences where they say they feel hands all over their body and there's only one person actually doing the massage. You know, several months after I saw you, I saw a cranial sacral person here in Santa Fe, and I felt he was on my neck, but I felt other hands on my body. And he, you know, I said to him, has anyone ever said to you that, you know, blah? And he's like, oh yeah. You know, I mean, I've had people say that they feel other hands and other beings in the room. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's twice now that I've experienced that. And I think it's only, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know how you feel about taking a compliment, but I'm going to say to you that, you just strike me as someone, and my heart resonates with you, because I feel like you live close to the soul of the world. And because of that, you know, you have greater access or a greater sympathy with beings or angels, whatever you want to call it, things that we cannot see in our normal, quote unquote, 3D reality, and they come in and they help you. Do you feel like that's what happens? I know you have a close relationship with Kuan Yin.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. I feel that this energy work and what we're feeling by any one of its many names is energy. And when we have the opportunity during a healing session to relax, to let go of that linear thinking. And the deeper we go, even the conceptual reality. We are really letting go of all of that and feeling our body in another way, feeling from the inside without labeling, judging, qualifying, categorizing. And it opens a portal. It opens a new dimension or a new way of being with ourselves and each other and the soul of the world. And with that, we receive information, miracles, possibilities that we can't quite consider in our day-to-day life.
Yeah. Wow. I would love to ask you, if it isn't too personal, what speaks to you about Kuan Yin? Why do you have an affinity for her? Or I don't know, you bring her into your life in a way that's really profound and beautiful. That's what I observed when we had our conversation. And so how did that start? How did that relationship start for you?
I was a young girl growing up, and my mother loved, she had Chinese friends, so she had a teapot collection and Chinese and Oriental objects and art and beautiful things. And she had a statue of the most beautiful woman with very profound, clear, and accessible features. It was white porcelain, and I used to sit in awe of her and in communion with her. And she was who I spoke to of things that I didn't feel comfortable speaking to anyone else about. I could speak to her about anything. And she didn't react. She didn't give me penance like the priest in my Catholic church in the confessional. She didn't yell at me. She wasn't disappointed in me. And I actually developed a relationship with her. And my mom called her Miss Siam. So I knew her as Miss Siam. And she had a real presence in our home. And she had that name. It wasn't until so long later that I knew her as Kuan Yin. But interestingly enough, and I'm not quite sure of the time, how it went, but a friend had given me a card, a postcard, and I looked at that card and I recognized my old friend, but she was a he. There he was, but I knew it was her. And I read, it was Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion from India.
Wow.
Who became Kuan Yin in China. So that was a huge reunion and realization that opened up a whole way of knowing her. She's a transgender. She shapeshifts. She's everything and everywhere. So I felt a connection for pretty much as long as I can remember with her as someone who can hear me. And of course, she is known as the goddess of compassion. She who hears the cries of the world and responds.
Wow. 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 That is gorgeous. And how interesting that later on you recognized her, you know, completely out of the context that you had initially met her in, which was, you know, your mother's collection of art. But you felt particularly drawn to this figure who was known as Miss Siam. So you had no, you know, it was like, that's how you knew her. But then fascinating how you recognized that same personality, that same way of being in this God, deity, being from India. I mean, my mind is blown right now. You must have recognized the energy of compassion,
And the eyes. I saw through those eyes. I recognized her. I recognized my old friend. I recognized a part of myself that I put outside of myself, like we do with God, Goddess, right? We put it outside. We objectify it so we can have a relationship with it. But also, I learned to know her more and more and to recognize her in myself and in my own hands. When that love and energy touches someone else.
Yeah, I have to say, I don't think that I fully understood until later, because I used to have Mayan abdominal massage. I've had it 2 or 3 times. I don't think I really understood what I was getting myself into and what kind of deep somatic work it is to do abdominal massage. And then I reflected on it, you know, over the course of months. And I thought, oh, you know, when I was a child, of course, when you're a kid, you have lots of experiences that are considered negative or traumatic or frightening or whatever. And my way of coping was to swallow it and swallow it and swallow it. And I think a lot of people do that, because my feeling is that we live in a culture, in a country where, you know, you're not allowed to emote. You're not allowed to release right at the moment that these things happen. So a lot of people, no matter what gender you are, we swallow these things. And I thought to myself, my gosh, no wonder I have digestive issues. I have been swallowing my grief, my sorrow, my horror, my fear, my terror, my entire life. So no wonder my digestive system doesn't work. And then I, you know, was getting the Mayan abdominal, and then I came to see you. And after I saw you, I reflected that the work reminded me of when a dog finally trusts you and it rolls over and lets you pet its belly, because it's a sign of just unequivocal trust and maybe love, affection. And I didn't know you, but I walked into your office and I trusted you immediately because of your way of being. But it is a pretty vulnerable place to get work done, because you don't know what's going to come up afterwards. And the fact that you can, the fact that you hold that space for people and that you curate a space that is really safe, and the work that you do is so profound, is really precious. It's precious to me. I know that. Also precious to others, because I've read the reviews that people write about.
Well, thank you. And well, that's it. I mean, you said so much, about that safe and very sacred space that I facilitate is the beginning. And what you said about yourself is such an observation, that you swallowed it all. So often we don't even know that all of life's experiences are digested. Maybe swallowed and digested or processed in some way. And if they aren't, if for whatever reason, if it is too traumatic, it's too painful, we aren't able, we aren't mature enough, we don't have the capacity in some way to unpack that and to know how to be okay with it or forgive it or get rid of it, or we just don't know what to do with it. And so it is not processed and not digested and stashed somewhere. And that stashing is actually a congestion there in the tissue, in the body, in the real system. And it creates patterns of tension and compensation in the body that might manifest in some way that seems unrelated. But when we have the opportunity to go into that place of unknowing and dark and sometimes scary, painful, and it isn't always. Sometimes a session, something is so ready to release. It's like, feels like it's right there on the surface. And it isn't even about remembering what it is or having to talk about it or process it that way. But with the breath and the touch and bringing into awareness that place, it moves that energy. And that's when healing happens.
I'm so excited. This is amazing. I love listening to you. I definitely want to talk about your book next, but I want to ask the second question, which is, I mean, with your creative streak, with your, you know, acting in theatrics when you're a kid, it just speaks to me of someone who's filled with abundant creative energy. So I kind of am fantasizing that you grew up in a circus family and like everyone was like, there was some cool trapeze acts going on or potentially tightrope or taming a lion or something. But I'd love to know, when you were a kid, were your parents creatives and did they recognize that creative bent in you and did they help, you know, kind of usher you into your creative self?
Yes. Yeah, they did. They were very creative and, lucky me, very earthy and very in tune with nature and the elements. My grandparents, my grandfather came, well, all my grandparents came over from Italy, but my grandfather came to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and had 6 acres of land right in town, but we lived on the dirt. And when my mom and dad got together, they were at the end of the driveway. And my dad started sketching. He was a landscape creative, a landscape artist. He did gardens and he even intuited Japanese dry riverbeds. And I had a pony as a kid who lived in a pagoda that my dad built. So everything they both touched was artistic and beautiful and creative. But all the fruits and vegetables and roses and our goat, Sicily, and everything was of the earth. And that's how I grew up, eating all of that and being in relationship with being up the driveway with my cousin. And it would start getting dark and I would have to come home in that twilight time. And there were fireflies, little lightning bugs that would be lit up everywhere. And I'd pass certain rose bushes and they'd call me, wait a minute. And then I'd have to go back and smell them and have this relationship with all of life and nature. And my dad built the house and he would build different wings as he had the time and money. And one wing would cantilever over the cliff and another one would be up here. And so one wing was built around a huge tulip tree, and that tree would move with the wind, and it became my oracle. So I would ask it questions, and depending how it moved and creaked with the sound, it would give me answers. So everything was the voice of spirit. So yes, very creative. And that's what they instilled in me. I think they instilled the possibility of anything happening. The possibility of the unknown or the creative or the crazy, the unorthodox voice to come through.
Wow. Wow. You know, my second question is, did you grow up in a religious household? And, you know, it sounds like from what I'm hearing that part of your parents, and I don't want to, maybe I'm going too far, maybe your grandparents as well, part of their religion, shall we say, because that's like such a limiting word, was with nature and the land. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. They recognized God, goddess in everything. And actually my mom got pretty outspoken about it later in life. I think they wanted to do the right thing for their children. And we, where we grew up in the neighborhood, the best school and the what seemed to be the thing to do was to go to the Catholic grade school and to have this religion. That was what was going to create a foundation of right and wrong and good people in their children. Well, my dad didn't go. He would, you know, he wasn't really into it, and that was okay. But my mom did, and she did it for us. And of course, after we became a certain age, then it was up to us to decide how we were going to worship, right? And how we were going to commune with the essence of all life. Then mom didn't really go either, but she was absolutely one of the most spiritual people I know. And in the book, How Do You Pray? She was the biggest supporter in my first contribution. She wrote for the book, which is such a beautiful piece. So they were not religious. They were spiritual, but not religious for sure before it was even a thing. And and I think we were very connected that way to the life force, to the spirit of life.
Oh my gosh, that's so eloquently put. Thank you so much. And also, what an idyllic childhood it sounds like. I mean, just that passage about you walking past the rose bushes and them saying, hey, why don't you stop here and pay us some attention? And that's, and then the fireflies, you know, even when I was a kid in Illinois, the fireflies, I saw them slowly diminish. You know, they just stopped showing up. I mean, things each year I could see that there were fewer and fewer in my hometown, but that was such an enchantment when I was a kid, seeing the fireflies and watching them come alight at dusk and start their conversations with each other and their hey, I'm available. What about you? You know? But I do think your comment about the rose bush really, really resonates with me because, you know, I certainly feel like, and I've described this before, and I just read a science article that said, you know, they have discovered that plants have 20 different ways of sensing and interacting with the world. And I thought to myself, and, you know, and the point was, look, humans, you have way less so far, you know, you don't have 20 different ways of sensing the world. And I believe that plants can find a way to converse with us, especially if we show respect, if we, are open to an open dialogue. I joke about where I'm house sitting now. Went to go make coffee the other morning and I just could feel the plants that I'm taking care of on my back being like, hey, it's time to water us. Hey. So I just looked across the kitchen counter. I said, okay, I'll do it after I finish getting this water hot. I'll come over and I'll take care of you. But I do. When I lived in Portland, I could feel the plants in my house start to nag me if they needed something. It was, you know, I don't know what that is, but I believe you when you say that the rose bushes were saying, come, please see how beautiful we are. Smell our scent. Rejoice in us, because we're supposed to be doing that, rejoicing in creation every day.
Well, I feel so much of what I call plant time. When we can really slow down enough to feel a whole different sensation and a whole different way of being. And my power plant is the lotus. So symbolically, and I've had the opportunity to be standing with it in the lotus pond with my feet down in that mud and those rhizomes and the big roots and being able to reach up with the flowers and have the bees buzzing me and to be in that plant consciousness and to have that communion. Well, sure, they can communicate and I can hear them much more in that space than if I'm walking by quickly a bush or a tree or a, it takes time. You know, even with rocks, it takes much more time and spaciousness. It's a different frequency. I mean, look how long they've been around on the earth. And it's a very slow thing, right? We blow in and, you know, do the thing right away and are around for a while and then move on. But they hold such a deep frequency. So I think there are, like you said, those ways, 20 ways or whatever, to communicate, to hear them, to feel that expression. But it may take time, just like the getting sick, where you have to let go of the day-to-day ordinary schedule. And in the name of sickness or retreat or unusual situation, that you create that place where you're open to something else happening.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. When I was living in Portland, I'd hike in this park all the time, Tryon Creek Park. And there were so many majestic, massive, old, huge trees. And I went down underneath one and put my back against its trunk. And I asked it a question and it sort of laughed at me. And it said, you know what? I mean, basically the upshot was, we don't communicate fast like that. You're going to have to sit here for a while and I'll get back to you. And I thought, I don't know if I have the time, but I respect the fact that you communicate more slowly. I got it. I'd love to talk about your book because it is a work of exquisite beauty. I mean, it really is. It is enchanting. It's profound. It's expansive and generous. And it's a gift to pretty much everyone who gets their hands on one, if they're lucky enough. And before we started the episode, you let me know that a publisher in Spain had bought the rights in Spanish. And so now it's being published in Spanish. But I'd love to know, okay, and I sort of know the story a little bit, but I get to hear it again and I'm very excited. How did you come up with creating this gorgeous work of art? But not only that, how are you so brave to reach out to some of the people that you've included? I mean, I am enthralled with your bravery and audacity, I have to tell you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I was impressed too, I must admit. There's an Audrey Lorde quote that I'm actually going to read to you because I have it right here. And it says, when I dare to be powerful, to use my strength in the service of my vision, then it becomes less important whether I am afraid.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, It all started with a vision. I woke up very early one morning. It was dark outside. The room was illuminated, and I heard the words, "How do you pray? Is it an hour a week as a designated place of worship? Or do you take your prayers out to the streets? Do you pray like your parents' culture or tribe? Or did you develop another way? Do you pray to God? Or do you have another name or no name at all? Is it a monologue or a conversation?" Well, by this time I'm sitting up in bed, right? And I took the pen from my bedside table and started writing. And it continued. People say, "Well, was it a voice?" Yeah, it was a voice. It was a voice with every sensor in my body. It was a voice that I somehow absorbed, that I heard, that I felt. And in that vision, I saw all these amazing, beautiful flashes of people in prayer. And sometimes it was flashes of nature. It was everything that I could imagine and even more. And it was the feet on the earth, the bare feet, dancing, walking, moving. It was so, so powerful. And I needed those empty days, right? I needed to cancel everything, business as usual, and be with that. And be like, what did that mean? That question was to me. So it was, how do I sit in that and know the answer to that in myself? I mean, I knew all these rituals, these ways, these things that I have learned, these structured form, prayers of form, these meditations, these sitting with it for a while, integrating it, sharing it with my husband first, and then my friends, my clients. And I would just ask them, "How do you pray?" And it opened something so big, because it was a deep dive into something. And so I became known as the keeper of the prayers. People would write to me, and I just knew a lot of different people that I asked. And we opened our home to prayer shares, where people would come and lead their way of praying, their ritual, their religious tradition. We had sweat lodges and dances and songs and drumming and of all traditions. And it was amazing. And it wasn't, it was actually maybe a couple years in where I maybe became brave enough or what to ask religious leaders, teachers, spiritual guides. And I didn't even know, well, how do I get to the person? And some people had websites, other people, so synchronistic as usual, right? One thing would lead to another thing, and a person who was untouchable suddenly was available. And then one person's sharing other people and their connections. And yeah, it was phenomenal. What the thread that continued from the first minute on to now was yes, saying yes, yes. Whatever I was saying yes to this inquiry, yes to being with people in this, yes to recording the prayers, yes to this is going to be a book. And yes, to continue it. Now I open it like an oracle. You know, I've read it many times and I can never get enough. But opening it like is exactly what I need today. And today I actually thought of the person. I didn't just open the book. I thought of someone and I opened it and I went, oh, perfect.
That's amazing. I, I kind of am thinking to myself, oh my goodness, I would love an oracle deck like that, where you could shuffle all the different ways of prayer and pick a card. And then you're like, okay, that's what I'm doing today. This is what's happening. Can I ask you, you know, if I'm not putting you on the spot, but what was one of the more unique forms of prayer that you encountered?
Well, I think at a glance, I would say the two atheists who shared their prayers. I was so like, wow. I don't remember how that went. Like, did I find the atheists deliberately? Like, wow, he's an atheist. That's come on, we praise. I don't know how we connected, but I thought, oh, that is so cool. You know, we all have different, you know, concepts, and certainly Buddhism is different than, you know, Christian or Islam, or, you know, everybody has a different flavor, even of a God or a deity or what. But I thought atheists, well, that is really cool, you know. So they were at a glance, but then as I started to receive the sharings, because they weren't just prayers, they were people's hearts and experiences and, yeah, connection to the divine or connection to that which is alive in them. Mm-hmm. So they were all so profound.
Wow. I absolutely know that, that kind of like that feeling in that sense that you're on the right path when doors begin to open for you. And one of the things I thought was really particularly beautiful is that, you know, all of a sudden people are introducing you to other people and this person. And that's when you know, kind of, the universe wants this to come into being. I mean, besides for the fact that you woke up in the middle of the night, there was a light in your room and you had this incredible vision and this really powerful question that, you know, frankly, not everybody would. You know, someone might just roll over and say, I think I just had a dream. I think that was a dream. I'm going to go back to sleep. You know, some people would ignore the call. You know, I feel like that was completely the perfect example of the call to adventure in Joseph Campbell's kind of hero's journey, heroine's journey. The call to, you were given an invitation in the middle of the night to begin this great work. And I think it speaks volumes to your character and who you are, your enchanted being that ran with it. So I just want to give you kudos for being brave and just unstoppable in that respect.
Thank you. Thanks, Kirsten. Well, a couple of things. One, the embodiment. I think if you're in bed and it's like, oh, that was a dream, I could, you know, record it in my dream journal or roll over and go back to sleep. But there was something very visceral about this. It wasn't like in my head, like a thought or a dream. It involved all of my senses. I was awake. This was something that I was feeling, smelling, the smell of the incense, the sound of the bells and all of it. It was so embodied. That was it. And I think that we can live life in our head thinking, or we are in our bodies. And at different times, it's different things, of course. But when we embody it and feel it in every cell, like I was saying as a kid, growing up in nature, I wasn't reading about it in a book. I really heard that. And then the other thing I wanted to share that reminded me of Rabbi Zalman Schachter Shalomi. In the book, wrote so many beautiful things in. And he was the first one. I sent out an email. Well, I'd like to ask you how you pray. And you can email me back, or if you'd like, we can have a phone conversation. And he wrote back, "I'd like a phone conversation." And I was like, oh my God, right? So I went to Radio Shack. This was a little while ago. So this was, the book came out in 2014. So it was years before that. I went to Radio Shack and got some little phone recorder thing that you put on your landline. I had this like princess phone and I put on the thing and we had a call and I recorded it. So I have 12 of these now, somewhat archaic, cassette recordings of people in their own voice sharing. It was like, and I look at that bin of these recordings in that princess phone and I just look at it and it's like, well, I'm keeping it. I mean, I don't know what, you know, but it's beautiful. But what he said, when people ask, "Rabbi, I pray, but I get nothing. My prayers aren't answered. I don't get an answer to my prayers." And he laughed and he said, "Ha, you hang up the phone too soon. You have to wait." And just like we're saying about timing, right? We're immediate gratification, right? People, we pray and we want that answer, that knowing immediately. Well, what I'm finding is sometimes our prayers are in fact answered, but not the way we wanted to hear them or not what we expected. Maybe it comes in the back door or it comes in a way that we can't even imagine. Right. So if we're not hanging up the phone, but being open constantly to that guidance from spirit, from nature, in all these amazing ways and forms and possibilities.
Wow. I just feel like I keep saying wow over and over again, because I would have been terrified to get on the phone with him. And I applaud your bravery. I've always thought that inside prayer is movement, or, you know, I think words move and exist in multiple dimensions anyway. So do letters. But there's a movement in words, because first of all, they're vibration and they're sound, of course, but their words can dance. Words can slow us down. Words are potent and they have power. And if you can combine that or include that with prayer, holy cannoli, that is some powerful magic. I think creation and beauty. And the book is exactly that. I mean, it's, you go from one prayer to the next and you feel like you're being held in almost like warm water. You're taking a warm shower or a warm bath. And then the next is you're getting a warm hug. The next is you feel this sense of deep belonging. They evoke so many different feelings. They did for me, at least. Mm-hmm. Also, I think it helped me to understand that human beings, despite what the world is or the news is telling us, we have such a capacity for great beauty. And each one of the reveries or revelations about how someone prays is another reminder for each of us, hey, there are a lot of different ways to connect to source, to that which is outside of us, to even our own selves. And so I appreciated the book for that as well. All the different points of view, all the different modalities, and just allowed me to glimpse how we are capable of so much beauty. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you. Yeah.
It's kind of silly to ask this question, but it's the final question of the podcast, because I feel like this whole story, but I always ask, would you care to share another story where you feel like you've witnessed something magical, miraculous, or mysterious? I'd love to hear anything if you'd like to share something else.
Yeah, I feel like I am going through a miracle right now, like in this phase of life. There is such angst, anxiety in this unknown future, in this very difficult, sometimes horrendous period in the world. And it seems like everything is being qualified. You know, well, it's a beautiful day, but we need rain. I'm doing well, but the state of affairs is it's almost like we're a little bit afraid to bask in the beauty. We feel a little bit guilty to actually bask in the beauty while there's so much suffering going on. How can I truly celebrate my abundance when there's so many homeless people on every corner that just breaks my heart? Like, what can I do about it? And activism is such a beautiful thing. How can we help? How can we use our energy to spread the good word about anything or to find a solution? So with so much of that and how it should be, how it is and how it should be, that I found, and I didn't realize it until looking at it from another perspective, was really limiting my ability to function wholly and to function infused with that abundance and spirit that is the life force in my every cell. And suddenly something is shifting where in the midst of it all, I'm finding a new way to love. And really, that's it. And that is miraculous, to find a new way to love. It was like I forgot because, or I couldn't because I was very contracted. I didn't know I was contracted. I do a lot of work here and there, and yet how can we not be? You know, so many people come and they're depressed and anxious, and it's like, well, of course we are. Of course we are. And we're alive. And we have so much to share in another way. So there's something really big brewing for me that is miraculous in a way. So I feel that the miracle is allowing what is alive to come through and speak it, share it in spite of the fear, to use my strength in the service of my vision, then it becomes less important whether I am afraid.
That's it for my conversation with Celeste. To be honest, I was enchanted with her prior to her telling me that her dad built her pony a pagoda when she was a kid, but that little bit of information sealed the deal. She's the grooviest person I've interviewed in a long time, and I couldn't wait to introduce her to all of you. If you want to check out what Celeste is doing in the world, find out a little bit more about her. There's all sorts of delightful links in the episode show notes, including where to buy her amazing book, How Do You Pray? Well, there'll be a link for that as well. Thanks to everyone who listens. I'm so grateful to all of you for being so kind and believing in this show. It means so much, I can't even tell you. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Celeste. Live close to the soul of the world. I mean, Celeste lives in a realm of enchantment, in a reality where anything is possible, where magic is around every corner. Her world is deeply alive and deeply intentional, and the magic and the mystery is accessible if only you believe in it. So, live close to the soul of the world like Celeste. Open your heart wide to the mystery just like Celeste. And believe that magic is everywhere, like Celeste. And pretty soon, your life, it's going to be filled with magic as well.
And I am creating right now something that I am going to offer because I work with a lot of women. I love everyone. But because I've been working with women, I think with the breast, the abdominal, but during COVID, I created an online salon, The Voice of the Feminine, where we really worked to see where we have been silenced, where we've silenced ourselves through fear, where we, you know, we're unable to express ourselves fully, like what I'm saying now that I'm calling miraculous, to express myself fully in spite of this situation, that patriarchal norm, that, you know, all the things. Well, now what is being birthed, what is really coming through me is something that I'm going to offer online. It's a virtual visceral program where we will touch the abdomen, the breast, the womb, as well as the prayer and the spirit and the goodness and the life force that is within every cell. So stay tuned for that. That's something that's coming, which again is so out of my comfort zone or my scope of familiarity or knowledge even to know how to do this stuff. But I'm feeling very strongly about doing it, this next thing. The call to action now is to go to my website and sign on to my mailing list. I don't do a lot of newsletters, but I would love to share this as it comes into form and as it becomes available, which is going to take a little while. I have two ways to get to the same website. My name, CelesteYacoboni.com, but also OnSacredWay.com. So both of those get to the same site. And on that site, you could sign on to my, you could read about all these wonderful things that that we're talking about, but also you can get onto the mailing list and then you'll get the updates as they surface.